Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, July 17, 2024. Happy birthday to Saul, who will be 97, and also Beth, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch-Andy, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Raman Nizza, is he's out and about doing other stuff. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode, Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult your physician. So how am I doing now? I was feeling a little off today, a little maybe dysautonomic. Who knows if it's the heat or overdoing caffeine without doing a lot of cardio. Not sure. So one of the things I did was to see if I could make myself feel better was to push fluid. So I drank a lot of water and then I broke out the coconut water. So I like coconut water because coconut water has a lot of potassium in it and has carbohydrate in it. So it's a nice natural way to get electrolytes in, a little bit of carbohydrate, and to get hydrated quickly. If you use plain water might not get in as fast, especially if you're feeling dehydrated or if you're like me, I have some issues with my autonomic nervous system. So I have to make sure that I'm well hydrated so I don't feel lightheaded and dizzy. And I'm trying to cut back on caffeine as well. So I don't know if I had overdone caffeine, but anyway, I found that when I drank a lot of water, drank coconut water. I also have cactus water, which is made from prickly pear cactus. And similarly to coconut water, has some carbohydrate and electrolytes and a lot of potassium. So it goes in easily. It's a great way to hydrate. And it has less calories than coconut water. You know, a cup of coconut water, something around 60 calories in a cup, whereas a cup of prickly pear cactus water is only 20. And it still tastes good. I mean, it tastes strange. It's a little something you have to get used to if you're not used to it. Same with coconut water, but coconut water may be more familiar because you're more likely to have encountered coconut water unless you live in the Southwest. I don't know if you're listening in the Southwest. The Southwest, they eat prickly pear. I've had prickly pear before, and you have to be very careful when you eat prickly pear because they are very prickly, and if the spines get into your mouth or lip, they're very hard to get out because they're very skinny and they can really hurt. But when prickly pear is processed into jelly or jam or juice, it's very healthful and has a lot of nutrients in it, and it's a great way to get hydrated. So I feel a lot better. Right now, I'm drinking a concoction, and here's my concoction. It's got pomegranate juice in it, and pomegranate juice has a lot of antioxidants in it. It has anthocyanins and ellagic acid in it. It has pomegranate juice. It's pomegranate blueberry juice. So there's blueberry in it as well. Great for anthocyanins and ellagic acid as well. I also have some erythritol sweetened lemonade in here to give it a little kick. The other thing that's in this is sea moss water. I bought the sea moss water thinking I would try it. And I took one sip and it tasted, I wasn't crazy about it. Let's just say that. I thought it tasted a bit moldy. So I put the sea moss water in here and I covered it up with pomegranate juice and lemon. And now this is just fine. I can't taste the mossy taste. But sea moss also is something that's very helpful. It's good for your immune system. It has antioxidants in it. So that's going down too. So it's a hot day here in Connecticut. I'm in a very comfortable house that's got solar panels on it. We have a heat pump that's being powered by the solar panels. So I'm recording the show downstairs now, and it's very cool downstairs. So I'm very comfortable right now. So outside, it's, you know, close to 90 degrees. Out in New Jersey, I was talking to my sister the other day. My poor sister, it's in New Jersey. It's very hot. It's over 90 degrees. But fortunately, she has air conditioning and also a pool. So she gets to get out of it that way. So that's good. But it's summer in full force. What do you expect? It's July. When it's July, you expect it to be summer. And so here we are. So make sure you hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And if you're having a headache, hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And if you need to do electrolytes, just make sure your electrolytes, whatever electrolyte you're using, is either plain electrolytes. It's just like a bit of salt, magnesium, calcium, potassium, and that's it. Or if you like flavored electrolytes, just make sure it doesn't have artificial sweetener in it. You want to stay away from things like sucralose and acesulfame K, because those, you don't need those, and they're not well proven to be safe. And sucralose can have issues with your liver, and any artificial sweetener can give you digestive upset. Even too much erythritol can do that. Erythritol or xylitol can do that as well. So be careful of those as well. I mean, the less sweetener you have, the better off you're going to be. I do like the erythritol sweetened lemonade. I don't have it all the time or every day, but I do enjoy it, because to get lemonade to be sweet enough that it's palatable, you have to put a lot of sweetener in it. I don't like to do that. And the other thing, of course, you can drink lemon water. So anyway, very tasty. I'm just a big fan of the pomegranate. Pomegranate, you want to drink a bit throughout the day so you get the antioxidants on board. All right. So I'm doing a bit better. I've got the knee. We're still working on the knee. I'm going to try to ride my bike again in a couple of days and giving it a little more rest, doing very modified resistance training and yoga in the meantime. Still doing my yin yoga, which I love, which is really great for my immune system and my autonomic nervous system. So very happy about that. And not feeling too bad at the moment. Ron is upstairs. He's still recovering. He's thinking that the drug is finally out of his body, but he feels weak, and he feels the need to do resistance training to get his legs stronger. So I don't know how much of that will be, you know, more load and slower RPMs on the bike, or if he's going to do hill training, or if he's going to go in the gym and do some leg presses or something like that. So he feels the need to do that. I'm going to remind him to make sure he eats protein and takes his whey protein and his branched chain amino acids and all the things that tend to build your muscles as well. All right. So talking about exercise. Last week we were talking about, we were talking about Stacey Sims and Stacey Sims talking about how menopausal women can definitely put on muscle mass, that unfortunately, when you lose estrogen, you don't get the satellite cells that help you to build muscle cells like you used to, and you're much more sensitive to cortisol. And if you do intervals that are longer than 30 seconds or going up to 60 seconds, that you're going to increase your cortisol. And we're so sensitive to cortisol that it makes it harder to lose weight, because remember that cortisol's job is to run around your body, look for protein or anything that it can break down, usually protein, and turn it into sugar so you have energy to run away from the bear. That's cortisol's job. And so cortisol raises your blood sugar. And if you raise your cortisol without burning off the sugar that you just made your protein into, if you don't burn that off, your body's going to look at it and go, we're going to store that as fat. And so in order to store it as fat, when your body sees extra sugar in your blood, it raises your insulin, because insulin's job is to get into your blood and turn sugar into something that you can use. Either it's going to take the sugar and escort it into your cells. And if it can't get it into your cells, it's going to take it and turn it into fat. So you raise your triglycerides. It's going to take those triglycerides and save them as fat cells. So cortisol, if you have high cortisol, you're going to have higher insulin. Have higher insulin, you're going to have more growth. And if you're looking to lose weight, that doesn't work. So doing more intervals and resistance training is good for peri and postmenopausal women. So anyway, one of the things that Stacey Sim talked about was plyometrics. And plyometrics are explosive activities that include jumping and landing softly, like intervals of jumping and landing softly. Now, for me, I'm dealing with this meniscus, and if I were to jump and land softly, I would not have a meniscus anymore. It would just go to shreds. So I have to be careful of how much jumping I do. And Ron reminded me that Ron, of course, he's teaching Silver Sneakers, and he's teaching senior yoga and senior fitness. So he talked about doing, there are plyometrics that you can do, power building exercises that you can do without jumping. Remember that Stacey said power is where you have strength plus speed. So you can be strong and very slowly lift a heavy weight, but when you have speed, you can do things like ride your bike fast or run fast or walk fast or just have better reaction times. And those are things that you want to maintain as you get on in years. So let's see what we have for power building exercises. Low impact moves that build explosive power that don't require jumping. So It says here, if you want to look like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, or PR your next race, or just build muscle and strength more efficiently, you need power training. And even if your knees, back, and hips can handle high impact moves, it's still a good idea to take a break so they can recover, reducing your risk of injuries. So here's the moves. So one of the things you can do is a medicine ball chest pass. So you get a medicine ball. So medicine balls can be different weights, and you know, you get a weight that's something that you can handle. And you sit or stand facing a wall. You hold the medicine ball at chest height, close to your body, and you explosively throw the ball to the wall and don't allow your hips to rotate or move. As it bounces back, catch it at chest height. If it drops below your chest before you catch it, you have to move closer to the wall, throw the ball harder. So the idea is you throw it against the wall, you want it to come down, bounce, and you want to catch it at your chest. So that's interesting. So a medicine ball, I didn't think of that. And then there's no jumping involved. You're doing explosively from your upper body. Here's another medicine ball exercise, medicine ball lateral scoop. You sit with the wall at your side. You hold the medicine ball against your waist. You engage your abs. So you're sitting in staff pose in yoga with your legs out and your body straight up and down. So you don't arch your back. You keep your hips without letting them rotate. You bring the ball to the outside of the hip furthest from the wall and then throw the ball explosively against the wall and scooping. So you're scooping it around your body and then throwing it against the wall. You catch the ball and reset before going to the next throw. So you're sitting with your legs alongside the wall, and you throw it by arching around from the outside of the wall to the wall. So that's interesting. You're going to get, and what you want to do, you want to keep your hips from rotating. So you're doing it from your upper body, from your arms. Then there's a medicine. So these are all medicine ball exercises. Medicine ball slam. You stand with your feet slightly wider than hip width. Keep your abs engaged. Raise the ball overhead and explosively slam the ball to the ground and bend your knees into a half squat. You catch it on the bounce and move straight into the next rep, straightening your legs as you stand. So you're going to squat. There is some squatting involved in this. So you have to, you can control how deeply you squat. And so you're just banging the ball on the floor. That must be very satisfying. Then there's kettlebell swings. And I have a kettlebell. And you stand with your feet about hip width apart. And hinge your hips back, not down. And you grab the kettlebell with both hands and keep your abs engaged and your back neutral. You lift the bell off the floor, swing it behind you, and explosively stand up and push your hips forward. So when you're swinging the kettlebell, you push your hips through as it's coming forward. And you let it swing that back down with control and as you reverse it into your next back. So when you do kettlebell swings, you're swinging it forward and your hips follow. Your hips come forward as you swing it forward. So it goes through your legs behind you slightly, and then you swing it forward with your abs forward. And then you engage your core. And that is an explosive routine. And you can do Tabatas, those where you do a whole bunch of swings. Like you do 20 seconds and then rest for 10 seconds and 20 seconds and do that for 2 minutes and then rest for 3 or 4 minutes and do it again. Then there's an incline power push-up. So you get into a push-up position, which is a high plank with your hands beneath your shoulders, but you put your hands on a weight bench boxer step. And then you lower your chest, you bend your elbows at a 45-degree angle, and you explosively push off so that your hands leave the surface you're on, and you catch yourself softly. So you're pushing back off of whatever you've pushed onto, whether it's a box or a bench or a stepper. So you go down, and then you push back. So you're releasing, and then you come back down, and you try to come back down gently. That is something I have to try. And again, there's no jumping involved there, although I wonder how my knee would handle that. That might be difficult. I wonder if I could do that, if you could modify it by doing it kneeling. That might be the thing to do right now, because I'm not excited about having my knees suspended. I'm not doing any kind of planks or push-ups where my knees are off the ground. So when I'm doing push-ups, even though I can do them, I'm just concerned that one of the things about a meniscus is just because it doesn't hurt doesn't mean it's not still injured. So you have to give it time. So I'm doing a lot of modifying right now. And so for at least a month, even though I know I can do the push-ups. I did the push-ups last week and I can do them in, you know, regular push-ups, but I want to rest that knee. So the knees go on the floor when I do push-ups and I'm still pushing with control against the floor. And I have yoga jellies, knee jellies, that I got, and I put them under my knees to pad them. My bedroom has carpet in it. So the bedroom is nicely padded anyway, but I do have these lovely knee jellies. So they put one under each knee. And so they would suit me whether I was on carpet or if I was on a hard surface floor. They're really wonderful. If you have sensitive knees and you're doing yoga poses, or even you're in a place where, you can't suspend your knees and your knees need to be on the floor and your knees are sensitive, getting these yoga pads, they're wonderful because they're just the right size for your knees. And they support you underneath. Of course you can use blankets or stuff, but these are gels. And so they give you some very specific support and they're meant to support your knees so that you don't have that icky, you know, painful feeling of your knees contacting the hard floor. I find them really great and it's made it so that I can do, I'm doing both planks. I'm doing planks with my torso suspended, but the knees on the jellies. So I'm not doing any suspended planks. The planks that I'm doing are with the knees on the jellies, and I'm doing a dolphin arm plank, a forearm plank with my torso suspended, but my knees and my legs are on the floor. And then I'm doing a side plank with one knee down. And the side plank is a little harder to engage the core, but you just have to isometrically engage it because it's not really holding you up because you've got that knee supporting you, but at least I can do it. And I think that's the thing to do, that when you have an injury, the thing that you want to do is don't say, well, I can't do anything. Figure out what you can do and do that. So I'm finding this. So this is very interesting, this push-up where you're pushing up off the box. It's very interesting. All right. And then the next thing is a single arm dumbbell push press. So this is a sort of Olympic lift. So you start with a dumbbell at your shoulder height. Keep your core engaged as you push your hips back and not down. And then explosively reverse directions as you approach standing position. So you start with dumbbells, your shoulder height, and your hips are down. I think you're starting in a squatting position. So you squat to a level that's comfortable for you. And then you explosively reverse directions as you approach standing, push the dumbbell towards the ceiling using the momentum from the leg drive. You hold the top position for a second, then lower the weight back down to shoulder height with control. So you're actually doing a squat as you lift each side. So you do it at a, so if you're going to do a bunch of reps, you want to do it at a level that you can safely push up with your arm. You want to be able to execute the whole exercise. So you might be able, like if you're just standing still, if you could do a shoulder press at say 15 pounds, you might want to experiment with 12, 10 or 12 pounds, something lower, because you're going to be executing this whole exercise. The point is to be able to execute the exercise, not to show off and do a weight that's heavier than what you can handle. So make sure you can do it. You can comfortably execute the reps without hurting yourself. So anyway, there are power exercises you can do where you're not jumping. So the problem with traditional power exercises, most of the exercise that focus on building power, like sprints, squat jumps, and Olympic lifts, are very effective, but they can be stressful on your muscles and joints, especially when you're me or you're older or you not older and you have arthritis or you have any kind of body issues that make it harder for you to do impactful jumping. So when you're sprinting, the force of your body making contact with the ground can be up to 5 times your body weight. Whoa, did you know that? According to a June 2017 research study that was published in the ISBS Proceedings Archive, that's a lot of resistance on your body. When you're landing from a jump, depending on the height of the jump, the impact on your body can exceed 4 times your body weight. Count them, 4. According to October 2015 paper in the journal Structural Engineering. Who knew? So what's bearing the brunt of the added force? Your ankles, knees, hips, and sometimes your back. And if you're already at risk for joint pain or injuries, you're only increasing the risk with plyometrics. So that's the thing, is you have to find you may have to find plyometrics that are not so intensely impactful. medicine ball. This is a good idea. I think Ron and I may need to invest in the medicine ball because that's easy on your back and easy on your joints, and yet you can do plyometrics. I'm going to have to go talk to him about medicine ball. So that's very nice. So this is really useful information. Okay, so who knew? All right, so here's some more exercise basics for menopause. So this is not from Stacy Sims. This is from somebody else. Let's see what they have to say. Here's some great exercises to do during menopause. And as a postmenopausal woman, I'll let you know what I think of them. So every woman experiences menopause differently. Some gain a lot of weight, others don't. I gained a moderate amount of weight. I'm still struggling with that. I'm still exercising. I'm struggling with injury and of different kinds. So exercise is still important when you're peri and postmenopausal. They can ease your transition by relieving stress and enhancing your quality of life. Regular exercise is a great way to stave off weight gain and loss of muscle mass. And most healthy women should look for about 150 minutes of moderate activity, 75 minutes of vigorous activity a week, according to the CDC. All right. So cardio, which cardio is best for you? You know, I always ask Ron this, which is the best cardio for you? And my patients answer me, they usually say walking or swimming. Or I say, no, best cardio for you is the one you'll do. So whichever one you'll do, that's the best one for you. And if you have a pool at your house, great. Use your pool. If you like to walk, go for a walk. If you like to ride a bicycle, ride that bicycle. If you have a treadmill or an elliptical in your house and you enjoy using that, you have to make sure it's something you enjoy and you will do. If you're using the elliptical as a clothing hanger and you look at it and you're like, no, then that's not the one for you. You have to figure out what you will do, what you enjoy doing, what you feel drawn to doing. That's what's going to be helpful for you. Walking, jogging, biking, swimming are the basics. If you're willing to do yoga, there's no end of no charge stuff on the internet that you can find in different classes, full-length classes, and classes that are short, classes that are 10 minutes long, 15, 20 minutes, up to an hour or more. And they're just for the cost of whatever your internet fee is. And you can do them on your phone, your tablet, your computer, your other tablet. Yes, I have two tablets going here because I have one for the shout out to the people watching on Facebook Live and shout out to the people on my phone who are looking at me through Instagram Live. And I'm reading off my outline, which is on my iPad. Why do I have an Android and an iPad tablet? Because I have an Android phone and I wanted to have an Android tablet so they would match because I have use for tablet. I prefer to read on a tablet. I'm older. I'm not a millennial or younger, and they have no use for tablets, except if they're working somewhere where they use tablets. But I have the Android tablet because I also have the Android phone, so I wanted them to match. I got the iPad because in 2020, when the pandemic happened, we had to really quick pivot and reverse because I had to see patients virtually, and they said you can use any app that's not public facing. So I said a lot of people are going to want to do FaceTime, and I don't have an Apple device, so I had to get an iPad. So I have this iPad. iPad paid for itself in a couple of weeks. It was great, and the iPad's very nice. I don't use it a lot. I use it for this, and I use it for work, and so I'm not constantly on it, so it's very well preserved. So I expect to have it for a long time. I've had it for 4 years. It's still fast and works great, and I'm enjoying using my iPad. I like to use my iPad for just something you can do if you want to take a live class, and the live class is through Zoom. Of course, you can project. If you have a TV, if you have an Apple product, Apple products will project to your TV if you have a smart TV. If there's Apple Play, what is it called? Apple Play? Apple AirPlay. If you have that on your TV, you can project anything from your iPad or your iPhone onto your TV. So I find that very useful because I'll use Zoom from my iPad and then I'll take a class. Of course, you have a smart TV, then you have YouTube and other apps on the TV that you can go directly to. So anyway, so I found it very useful. So I have four, I'm running four devices as I'm recording this show. It's pretty funny. Okay, it's 2024. What can I say? All right. So What else is good for menopausal women for exercise? Strength training, of course. Your bone density is something that you have to maintain. Osteoporosis risk skyrockets following menopause. You need estrogen to help lay down bone, and your estrogen levels kind of tank. So strength training becomes very important. They'll help to maintain your bone and muscle strength. Bone and muscle strength and also tensile strength, their resilience. So if you whack your bone, you're less likely to break it if it's resilient. Of course, resistance training, strength training revs up your metabolism. Metabolism slows down as you get older, while you can keep it higher by doing resistance training. So at home, you can use dumbbells, you can use resistance tubings or bands. In the gym, you can use weight machines or free weights, and select a level that's heavy enough to tax your muscles in 12 reps and progress from there. This is an interesting suggestion, because that's not what Stacey Sims says. She wants you to lift heavy stuff. She doesn't use the word stuff, but we won't get into that. So she's saying you want to do a heavy enough weight that you can only do 3 to 6 reps, and then you're exhausted and you have to stop. So that's pretty heavy weight. I admit that I tend not to do that, because I'm afraid of injuring myself. If I had really good form and a really good personal trainer, I might consider that, but it makes me nervous to lift that heavy of weight. And if I was going to do that, I would have to be at a gym, because I just don't have all those weights. And, you know, for me, because I can lift 25 pounds and do a few reps of 25 pounds. There's certain exercises I can do 25 pounds and do more than 6 reps. So if I'm going to do 6 reps, I need the higher weights that they have at the gym. And so you may find that if you don't have a whole set of very heavy weights at home, you have to go somewhere to get them, or you can always purchase them. I do strength training. I try to do 2 sets a week of actual resistance training exercises with both, dumbbells and with body weight. I'm not crazy about it, but I make myself do it because I know it's good for me. And I so much enjoy yoga. I enjoy yoga so much more. I do some yoga pretty much every day. The only time I don't do yoga on a given day is if I don't have time. And if I have some time somewhere, I'm going to do at least 10 minutes of yoga in a day. I've already done half an hour today. And after I'm done making the show, I will probably do another half hour, 40 minutes or so. And it'll be very relaxed, because the end of the day, it'll be very relaxing yoga. So it'll be probably a yin class. So no two women experience menopause in the same way. Your unique symptoms will tailor your approach to relief. So what's the best relaxation technique for you? The one you'll do, right? So do whichever relaxation technique floats your boat, whether it's yoga, deep breathing, meditation. Yoga nidra is great. I really recommend yoga nidra. Yoga nidra, you have somebody talking to you, and it's a guided meditation, and it's a full body relaxation. So the person who's leading the yoga nidra, you get into a position that's the most comfortable one that you can get into, that you can stay in for a while. So usually that's lying on your back with bolsters and pillows and props. If it's cold, with a blanket, you could be in your bed, you could be on the floor, you could be in a comfy chair, but just a position that you can comfortably stay in for as long as you're going to do the yoga nidra for. And you can do it for, again, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, 45, an hour, hour and a half. It's whatever amount of time you want to do it for. You can experiment with the amount of time that you can stand to do, but also relaxes you. And if you can get to a place where you can do 45 minutes, it can be lovely, really lovely and relaxing, because it can help you to sleep better, and it can also replace some of your sleep. I don't recommend it replacing some of your sleep, but if you're having trouble sleeping, yoga nidra can be a very helpful thing to do, because it can both relax you and replace sleep. There's a thought that yoga, half an hour of yoga nidra is equivalent to half an hour of 2 to 4 hours of sleep. So half an hour of yoga nidra, that's not very long. It's amazingly relaxing. Supported and restorative yoga poses may offer relief. They can calm your nerves, center your mind. You can do restorative practices. So restorative practices will generally use props. The poses are very easy to do, because you do have the props. You might be turning onto one side. Your legs might be elevated on a bolster. Your hips might be elevated on a block, and they're poses of a restorative practice. You're going to be lying down or seated for all of the poses, and usually with props. So they're very, it's very calming and restorative to do. And they can help with your hot flashes, your irritability, and your fatigue. If you like to dance, you could dance. You don't have to dance outside. You can dance. You can dance outside. You can dance away from the home. You can go to a class. You can do classes online. Again, if you go on the internet, if you do YouTube, there's no end of classes that you can do that include dance. And there's also apps that you can pay for and buy, and you can do different kinds of workouts. There's a lot of different ones. Just select one that works for you. You can certainly, you can do free dance. You just put music on and just dance around your home or your room, wherever you are. You can also do formal dance. You can take jazz, ballet, ballroom, or salsa classes, and those are available online. You can probably pay for classes by Zoom and take those classes remotely. You can certainly go to studios and do classes. And you can also do all manner of dance at home. There's Bhuti Yoga, which has some free dance in it. There's Gabrielle Roth style dancing, which was the ecstatic dancing. And then, of course, there's Nia, which is body, mind, fitness art that combines modern dance, jazz, ballet, martial arts, and yoga. It's wonderful. It's available online. You can certainly do Zumba, and Zumba and Nia and things like that are available to do at home if you want to. You can certainly find classes, but if it's hard to find classes in your area, then doing them remotely, doing them in your home is a great way to go. There's also Body Groove. That's an app that you can get, and it has different workouts, and people find that really fun. So these are things you can do in your house. And if music moves you, it's a great way to exercise, and you don't feel like you're exercising. You certainly can get an elliptical or Stairmaster, but the only thing about the elliptical or Stairmaster is if you stare at it or use it as a clothing hanger, it doesn't work. So, I mean, you might get some exercise draping the clothes over the Stairmaster, but it works better if you use it. And the thing with the elliptical and the Stairmaster, you don't want to just get on it and do half an hour at a moderate pace. You want to do your intervals if you're going to use those. They definitely can help, but that's my recommendation, that if you're going to use them, you're either going to do a very easy workout that's cortisol lowering, where you keep your heart rate really down because you need a low intensity workout, or you want to do intervals. You don't want to do a moderate workout when you're perimenopausal, because like Stacy says, you're going to raise your cortisol, and raising your cortisol is not a thing you want to do when you're peri or postmenopausal. Okay. There's a specific mention of Zumba here. I used to teach Zumba. Zumba was really fun. There are many, many people. It was, so Zumba was started by Beto Perez, who is from Cali, Colombia. So the interesting thing about Zumba is that he started it. He was a fitness instructor, and he started it in the days when we still had cassettes. It was that long ago when he started it. He was still in Colombia, and he didn't speak English well. So I don't know if he's from Cali. I don't know if he started his classes somewhere else, though, in Mexico or maybe in Florida or somewhere in the U.S., but he didn't speak English well. So he got to class and he had forgotten his music. So he had to grab the cassettes that were in his car, just music that he happened to have. And it was his favorite music. It was, Latin-based music, mostly cumbia. So he went in and started showing people the moves, and he didn't talk. He just showed people, and they had to follow along, because typically in Zumba, the teacher doesn't talk. That's how we were taught. We demonstrate the moves, and you follow along. And the moves are very repetitive, so they're easy to pick up. Well, the way we're taught to teach is you have a song, and you break down the song into its components. So if there's a chorus, you always do the same movements during the chorus. You always do the same movements during the verses. And then if there's a bridge, and the bridge repeats in a couple places, you do the same movement in the bridge. So it's very easy to pick up the moves. And the other thing that we were taught is that you teach the same songs over and over for a few weeks, And if you want to make changes, you don't change the, because in NEA, we would change the whole routine. Like, so you'd be teaching, you know, you'd be teaching a whole class that had music by Enya, and, or you'd have a whole class that had music by another artist, or you'd have a whole class that had, that featured some songs by, like, a Golo had featured, what's her name? Angelique Kidjo. So you'd have a whole routine that was mostly Angelique Kidjo. You do that whole routine, and in a couple of weeks you would do a different routine with had all new songs. Well, we wouldn't do that in Zumba. What we would do is you'd have, you didn't have song routines, you'd have songs. So you're teaching 10 songs and teach the same 10 songs for a month or a couple of weeks to a month. And then if you want to make changes, you change one song at a time, maybe one or two songs at a time, and that's it. So that people are like, they get the excitement of a new song, but they get the familiarity of the other songs. And so they feel successful. That's how it was explained to us. I thought that that made a lot of sense. And the formula for teaching to the songs, where you break it down so that you're teaching the same routine for different parts of the song, that made a lot of sense too, because people hear the chorus and they're like, okay, this is what I do during the chorus. This is what I do during the verse. This is what I do during the bridge. And they can put it together. And then they feel like they're dancing. They feel like they're doing a routine and they get it. And they learn the routine over time and they feel successful. And the thing with a dance class is dance classes include choreography. If people can't do the choreography, they get confused, they get frustrated, and they don't feel successful. So if you keep the choreography simple, I notice that when I'm learning to dance, I have to first learn the dance and in a head kind of way. I have to memorize the dance until the dance gets into my body. And then once I have the kinesthetic memory of the dance, then I can put my energy and personality into it. And then and then I can start really enjoying it. But it takes time to learn a routine. And for your average person, that's going to take some time over a few classes to get into a routine. So it was very, very cleverly done, I think. And Zumba took off when it was very popular. There's not as many classes around here now, but they still exist. I think when you dance classes generally do better in heavy population centers, around universities, in cities. I don't think they do as well in rural areas, not to say, because we do have a few classes still in this area, in Mansfield and Windham, but it's not nearly as popular as it was maybe 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. But I think if you go into the cities, it's still there. And of course, we have the internet now. I'm guessing there's a Zumba app that you can sign up for and do that if you want to. And because you can certainly do DVDs and Zumba at home. So I have to look into that, see if there are, in fact, if there is, in fact, a Zumba app. It's mostly Latin-based because, like I said, it was started by Beto Perez, who's Colombian, and he, because he's from Colombia, the big dance in Colombia is cumbia, but it also incorporates other Latin styles such as salsa, merengue, and bachata. And then, of course, whoever's teaching, you can teach Zumba to any song that you want to. So I used to teach to the Spice Girls. My favorite Spice Girls song to teach to was Spice Up Your Life. Do You Wanna? Whatever the name of that song is. That wasn't my favorite one to do. It's nice, but Spice Up Your Life, that was the best one because it had a Latin flair to it and it was very dramatic. Back in the day, I taught to, remember Psy's Gangnam Style? I taught that. And I taught a hip hop song by Missy Elliott. And I got the inspiration from Kim Gates, who I think still teaches, to teach Michael Franti's, Hey, I'll Be Gone Today, But I'll Be Back From Around the Way. That song, that was a wonderful song to teach Zumba to. It such a heartfelt song. It brought tears to my eyes. And the choreography, it was very easy to choreograph because it had very definite parts to it. So Zumba can be really, really fun if you do it. You have to be careful. Like if you're going to do Zumba and you have any knee or hip issues, you want to make sure you're wearing supportive shoes. And you want to wear shoes that are meant for exercise dancing in. So you're not going to wear running shoes. You're not going to wear basic cross trainers. You're going to wear a shoe that was meant, that sneaker, you know, a training shoe that is meant for dancing, because you're going to be turning and sometimes spinning and doing some impact and things like that. And you want the shoe to be supportive, but also light. So it's not going to be the same construction as a running shoe or a cross trainer. Anyway, Zumba was wonderfully fun, I must say. I haven't been doing as much dancing because of my knee issues, but I could theoretically go back to it. You know that working around the house counts. So if you're doing easy dusting with a Swiffer, that's not going to do it for you. But if you're vigorously cleaning the house, or if you're doing raised beds and major yard work, where you're doing a lot of digging and planting and walking back and forth and raking and hoeing and pushing a mower, and if you're doing wood, you're chopping and stacking wood, that's exercise. That totally counts. And I tell people, you know, I always ask people when they come into my practice what they're doing for exercise. And sometimes they say, well, my job is very active. And, you know, I assess what their job is, and often it is. So if they're an electric line person, or if they do, if they're a house painter, or if they're a landscaper, or if they do heavy duty cleaning, you know, office cleaning and like that, then they're all set for exercise. So the other exercise you can do is something you can make up that's creative. Physical activity is essential, but you can do whatever you want to do. You could go rock climbing. You could do kayaking. You can do hiking. We have a lot of people around here who like to go to the peaks in Vermont, not Vermont, New Hampshire, and climb. There's a number of peaks that you're supposed to climb, and they get into hiking those. And that's a thing that people do. Awesome. And also make sure to be creative about other things, joining classes, painting, knitting, anything that gives you a sense of accomplishment. So, remind you that if you're hot, which I'm dealing with heat right now, I find that the more I exercise, the better I tolerate heat. And so it's frustrating for me to not be able to get as much cardio while I'm dealing with this knee. But I find when I do regularly, I tolerate heat better. What I don't tolerate well is getting hot while sitting still and stressed. So I have to have it cool in my office, because I get keyed up when I'm seeing patients. And if I start to get hot, also that doesn't work. And like when I have a sensitive nervous system, getting overheated in a way that doesn't work for you isn't good. Getting heated while exercising, as long as it's not excessive, that I can handle. And the more I exercise outside, the more I can handle that. And I'm looking forward to getting back out there so I can be comfortable about sweating. And, you know, the key to being comfortable with sweating means getting cool easily and drinking. Mm-hmm. Yum, yum. So I have lemon and pomegranate and blueberry and moss. Yeah. So I wonder what else I could have put in there. It would have been nice to squeeze some actual lemon or lime or orange in there, like to have some actual fruit floating around. Like, if you don't want to do alcohol, but you want to have the experience of drinking wine, pomegranate juice is a beautiful color. I have patients who came to me who said, and I instructed them to drink pomegranate juice for the antioxidants and the anti-inflammatory benefit. And I have some patients actually put the pomegranate juice in a wine glass, so, and they sip it, and it makes them feel like they're drinking a glass of wine. I think that's a great thing to do if you're trying to, you know, reduce your alcohol. Okay, so that was some exercise basics for menopause. So now let's talk about some exercises to help you with your bone density, because bone density is very important. Your bone density can go down because estrogen is a proliferative hormone. So you have estrogen and progesterone, which you have a lot less of. Progesterone, you have minimal to no progesterone when you're postmenopausal, unless you ingest it somehow, unless you're taking it. And estrogen, you can have some because your fat cells still make estrogen. Your ovaries will still offer you some estrogen. And you can make some estrogen from your adrenal hormones. There's a whole cycle of hormones from your adrenals that can turn into estrogen. So you still will have some estrogen postmenopausally, but not nearly as much as when you were ovulating. Progesterone, pretty much the only way to make progesterone is by ovulating. And if you're not ovulating, you're not making progesterone, because when you ovulate, the ovum splits at, well, the follicle splits, becomes an ovum and a corpus luteum, and the corpus luteum's job is to hang out in your ovary and make progesterone for you, so it supports gestation, and it tells the other follicles that develop to go back to sleep. It's anti-inflammatory and anti-proliferative, so it's really balancing to estrogen, so you don't have the excess growth that estrogen can cause. So estrogen will make your bones stronger. It makes your bones grow because it's a growth hormone. So you have less of that as you get older. So it's like Stacey Sims was saying, that you have the estrogen promotes those satellite cells, so you rebuild bone. So exercises that build healthy bones. So obviously, if you're going to exercise, you want to talk to your doctor first to make sure you don't have any conditions that can prevent you from exercising. If you have a condition, like here, I have this knee, I have to be careful, make sure that whatever exercise I do isn't going to aggravate my knee. Or I do the exercise in a way where I have modifications so that I'm not aggravating the knee. So exercises that build healthy bones, usually it involves some weight bearing, putting pressure on your bones. When you whack on your bones, you create a piezoelectric current inside the bone that draws minerals to it. And so that's how you get minerals in. And then you have to eat protein so that you build the matrix structure, the building blocks of the matrix. And if you have adequate protein and collagen in your bones will be resilient. So if you do fall and whack your bone, it's going to be more resilient and you'll bounce and it's going to be less likely to break. So you have to be able to eat protein to do that. You need adequate protein to make that happen. And so it's about consuming protein, consuming the right minerals. If you actually have reduced bone density to the point where they've been diagnosed with osteoporosis or osteopenia, I do instruct them in taking supplements. And it's usually a basis of calcium, magnesium, vitamin K2, preferably the MK4 form, and calcium, magnesium, vitamin K2, and vitamin D. So those are the four basics that you want people to be taking. And if people are growing if you have a trial of somebody's not taking supplements, but they're eating really healthfully and they do resistance training, and from bone density test to bone density test, they have an increase in their bone density, then that's fine. They don't have to take supplements. But usually for insurance purposes, I have them do it. I personally haven't had a bone density test. My PCP keeps offering it to me. And I'm like, I don't really want to do it because I'm zoftic. I'm a little bit big. I have big bones. I exercise all the time. I eat good. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I don't smoke. The only thing I do that could be harmful to my bones is I probably have too much sugar, but I eat plenty of protein and I take protein shakes and I take magnesium, calcium, and vitamin D and K2. So, if I were told I had osteoporosis, I probably wouldn't take the drugs. So why do I want to be exposed to the radiation? I'll save it for my teeth, my poor teeth, which are undergoing tooth decay, and I keep having to have cavities filled. So I keep having to have x-rays for that, and then I have to have mammograms. And so I don't want to have a bone density test too. So anyway, so here's some specific exercises that can whack on your bones and give you that nice piezoelectric current and tell your bones to grow, grow, grow. So bone density is a move it or lose it phenomenon. And so if you don't use your bones, you will lose them. And if you do use them, they will grow and they will be happy. So the goal to reduce, the goal for exercise for us to reduce osteoporosis, it's challenge the areas of your body that osteoporosis mostly affects. That's going to be your hips and your spine. Those are the big places because that's your center of gravity. That's what holds you up. If you don't have hips or a spine, you're not going to be able to hold yourself up. So one way to challenge your hip bones is through foot stomps. So you stand on your foot. Imagine you're crushing an imaginary can underneath it. Go stomp. So repeat four times on one foot and then repeat on the other foot. You can hold onto a railing or sturdy piece of furniture if you have difficulty maintaining your balance. So just go stomp, 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 stomp. Really nice. Bicep curls. That's easy to do. You can do dumbbells. You can do light weights, whatever works for you. And it also depends if you're trying to just get basic strength or if you're actually trying to build serious muscle mass. Now, Stacey Sims would say, find a weight that you can only sufficiently do a bicep curl for 3 to 6 reps, and that's it. And then you have to put it down and rest and start over. If you're going to do more reps, if you want to do 15, you know, 10 to 15 reps, of course, you're going to use a lower weight, and they will both help you to increase your bone density. But you want to do it at a resistance that's challenging for you. If you're just tossing the weight around, using a 1 pound weight, and it's very, very easy, it's not really going to do anything for you. So you want to make sure that you're actually using a weight that does something for you. So you can take a dumbbell in each hand, or you can do it one bicep at a time. Either way is fine. And if it's easier for you to do a heavier weight by doing one bicep curl at a time, that's fine. You can also hold a bar and do bicep curls with that. And you can also use bands. You can stand on a band and pull the bands up. That's another way to do it. There are machines that you can do at the gym that do biceps for you. So you pull them into your chest and lower your arms to return to starting position. They're recommending 8 to 12 reps. So again, you want to do the highest weight that you can comfortably do, 8 to 12, if you're going to do that. If you're doing the Stacey Sims method, you're going to use more weight than that. All right, then there's shoulder lifts. You'll need weights or resistance band to perform shoulder lifts. You take a dumbbell in each hand or step on a resistance band while holding each end in your hand. You start with your arms or hands at your sides and slowly raise your arms straight in front of you, but don't lock your elbows. So this is you're raising the arm in front of you. So that can be helpful for bone density as well. And you're going to repeat 8 to 12 times. You can do hamstring curls. And so let's see how the hamstring curls can be done. They have machines for that at gymnasiums. You perform it from standing if possible, and you would place your hands on some heavy furniture for balance. And you can do it without using, any kind of resistance behind you. You can also use ankle weights if you want to. And you're gonna stand and you're gonna do curls behind your back. You're gonna go from standing to curling, reaching your heel towards your buttocks and releasing 8 to 12 times once again. Hip leg lifts. So you're gonna start with your feet hip width apart, shift your weight to one foot and flex the other foot. Keep your other leg straight as you lift it to the side, no more than 6 inches off the ground. So you probably want to you might want to hold on to something. And if you have the balance, you don't have to hold on to something. Then, of course, squats. Squats are great. You stand with your feet hip width apart. Rest your hands lightly on a piece of furniture for balance if you need to. Bend at your knees to squat down. Squat only until your thighs are parallel to the ground. If that's hard on your knees, don't go that far down. Tighten your buttocks to return to standing and do it 8 to 12 times. You can also just do a sit against the wall and in a squat position and stay there. So then the ball sit, you sit on the exercise ball with your feet flat on the floor, keeping your back as straight as possible. If you're able, hold your arms out at your sides, palms facing forward. And then you hold as long as a minute if you can. So you're sitting on an exercise ball when you do that. One leg stands also, just so you can hold onto a piece of furniture or not, graduate to not holding onto a piece of furniture. If you're standing in line and waiting, maybe stand on one leg while you're doing that. You'll work it's going to work your hips. It's going to work your glutes. You're going to access, your hips as well as your spine if you stand on one leg. And of course it works on your balance. And if you can't do it while standing in line, then do it somewhere, where you can hold on to a wall, you can hold on to a piece of furniture. You can hold on to something while you're standing on one leg and you'll still get benefit out of it. Things to not do. So as important as to know when exercise is to help, it's just as important to know what you shouldn't do. So hiking, jumping rope, climbing and running may put too much demand on your bones and increase your risk of fractures. That just depends on how far gone you are. You have to talk to your doctor to see if that makes sense for you. A lot of impact, you might be, if you really have a serious osteoporosis, you may have to curtail exercises that have a high risk of falling. It really depends. And you have to be pretty far gone for that, or, you know, pretty far along for that to be the case. When you do a lot of high impact activity, they can put too much strain on your spine and hips. And like I said, increase your risk of falls. So you have to be careful of that. And if you do exercises that involve too much bending forward or rotating, like sit-ups and playing golf, you don't have to do sit-ups to work your core. There's so many other things you can do. Planks are a lot better. And like I said, for me, because my knees are compromised, my knee is compromised right now, I'm not doing a full-on plank. I'm doing a plank where I keep my knees on the floor. And so it's a knee-down plank, if you will. And I'm still tightening my abs and tightening my core, so I'm still getting an isometric exercise for my core. It's always important to modify the exercises to whatever's going on with you, and so that you can successfully execute the exercise and also feel a sense of accomplishment and also get the benefit without injuring yourself. Obviously, you don't want to injure yourself. And if you already have an injury, it's always a good idea to modify so that you don't enhance the injury. So there you go. So that's some exercises to help you with your bone density. So next week we'll get on about how hormones affect your sleep, and we'll talk about weight loss and those popular drugs. I've still been meaning to talk about that. Okay. All right. So that was a lot of information for you. So I'm going to sign off at this point. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch this program. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, MD. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.